Jason Carr appearing on behalf of the appellant James Allen Johnner Jr. Your Honor, this is a case that's disturbing. There's a virtual parade of horribles that is in this record. It's a disturbing record to read. It's really at its essence where the fantasy of the internet comes to washes ashore on the hard ground of reality here. I don't have the most sympathetic client in the world. You read these instant messages and my client says all kinds of things that are disturbing, that express sexual deviancy. He just doesn't come with completely clean hands to this court or to the district court. Alternatively, though, the government did all kinds of things that are disturbing in this case as well. There's no question that there's ample evidence here of inducement. There's inducement, and then there's more inducement. Once again, there's very little evidence in this record that my client exhibited any predisposition towards having sex with minors prior to agency contact. So this whole case basically comes down to, should this highly prejudicial material have come in? And if it shouldn't have come in, was that error more harmless, more likely than not, harmful to Mr. Johnner? And I would submit that the answer to both those questions is yes, this evidence should not have come in, and yes, the evidence is harmful, therefore this case should come back to the district court.
Doesn't it rebut the defense of entrapment here?
I don't think that it does, Your Honor. For the only way that this evidence could have any relevancy is towards predisposition. The law is relatively clear that predisposition must occur prior to agency contact here. All this information that we're talking about came in during the instant message chats with the undercover agent pretending to be Erica, a 14-year-old girl. So the FBI agent, Mr. Mahoney, is talking to Mr. Johnner. We have agent contact. That's when the prejudicial stuff starts coming in. Now,
But the agency never did solicit him to expose himself.
He did, Your Honor. Agent Mahoney did solicit it. He said quite clearly, I'll look at excerpt of record, volume one. He says to the effect, come on, show it to me. You know you want to. You know you want to do it. He definitely elicits. He's the first one who says, the agent's the first one who mentions sex. He's the first one who mentions that, who says anything about John or exposing himself. So neither of these parties have clean hands here, and that's important to realize.
But that was presented to the jury on a question of entrapment.
Exactly, and this, our whole defense was entrapment, and that's an important point in this case because the government is trying to argue that they needed to pile on all this cumulative evidence, highly prejudicial pornographic photos to prove intent. Intent was never at issue in this case at all. This is entirely an entrapment case. And I remind the court, back before the 70s, to even run an entrapment defense, you had to concede all the elements. And you don't have to do that in modern times. But still, the whole essence of entrapment is, I did this, but I am not. The jury should find me not guilty because of this affirmative defense, which says the government created this crime rather than myself going out there and willingly engaging in this. You have to remember, this is over 3 months worth of, this is like 3 months worth of contact. Hours and hours and hours and hours of instant message chats here. I mean, this is, if you read all these instant message chats, you realize there's this huge relationship. There's these psychological ploys the agent's using. This man who's depressed, who's, you know, a vulnerable victim, gets ensnared into this whole thing. And in reality, he falls in love with this mythical Erica character. I mean, it couldn't be more sad. But, you know, back
that he thought was a 14-year-old girl.
That he thought was a 14-year-old girl, exactly. Now, one of the weird aspects of this case is the whole traveling. This is, you know, he's charged with traveling and he's charged with enticement. Traveling is a crime that once you get on the plane, it's a thought crime, essentially. When you're on the plane and you're traveling under state lines and your intent is to have sex with a minor, you are guilty at that point. What's interesting about this crime is if Erica had been a 40-year-old woman pretending to be a 14-year-old, rather than an FBI agent, then Johnner would still be guilty of the crime once he got on the plane, but he could come here and freely have sex with a 40-year-old, and that wouldn't matter. So it's a very odd crime in that respect. And it's one of the reasons why entrapment is a good defense in this situation, because the jury is going to be troubled by the nature of the crime, because the defendant never has a time to back out. We have a guy here who has no criminal record. He's never been arrested. He's an accountant. He's in his mid-40s. There is a chance, a reasonable chance, that had there been a real 14-year-old that he was presented with in person, that he might have said, look, this is crazy, I can't do it. He never had that opportunity.
Well, doesn't that just go to the whole charge of travel with intent to engage in a sexual act with
it's an odd crime.
For him to expose himself on the net there so he can be seen.
Good question, Your Honor. What is the probative value of these photos, of him exposing himself? And remember, there's like 16 different photos that are introduced throughout this whole trial in punctuated stages. So we never get any kind of jury is constantly flashed these photos, constantly seeing these highly, I find them very troubling. And I have the photos right here, and I didn't want to look at them, but I had to. And they're disturbing photos, they are to me. But anyways, the question, does it go to show intent? Only in the vaguest sense, because...
It looks like it does. Why wouldn't it?
Because, you have to ask yourself, Your Honor, if I am really what it says is I'm predisposed to expose myself on the Internet. Now, does that speak directly to the question of I'm predisposed to have sex with a 14-year-old? Is there a difference between being a sexual deviant who likes to expose yourself versus being a pedophile? And is there a direct connection there? I would submit that there isn't, that there is some attenuation in the probative value. Put that aside, though. I mean, this evidence, if I just had that going for me, I might have I'd have a much weaker case, but I have a huge other point in my favor, which is the defense counsel offered to stipulate that he sent these photos on the dates he did, to stipulate the facts of occurrence, that he exposed himself on this time, that time, throughout the chronology of these instant messages. So he made an offer to stipulate that was sanitized, this evidence, still would have had all its objective probative value, all of it, but it would have been without this highly prejudicial, sexually charged element. And there's nothing that could be more prejudicial to a jury, and the majority of these jurors are females. Because nothing that I can imagine is more prejudicial than constantly exposing the jury to pornography. That exposing female jury members to photos of a man, you know, manipulating himself on the Internet constantly. It's like
he was willing to stipulate that they would have known it anyway, right?
He was willing to say, and that's an important point, and that's one thing that makes this case a little different from Marino Balderrama. You know, Szymanowicz and Balderrama really provide the legal contours of how we have to analyze this case, along with Old Chief. In Marino Balderrama, he offered to stipulate that the films at issue there contain child pornography, so there's no need to show them to the jury. We're willing to stipulate that they have this content. Virtually similar to what we have here. You know, there's these photos, here's their content, we're willing to stipulate the content. The government wants to bring in the material anyways. Why do they want to show the jury the photos? Because they know it's going to promote a visceral emotional response. It's going to make the jurors dislike Johnner. It's going to make the juries angry that they're having to sit there and be subjected to this pornography, and they're going to hold that against Mr. Johnner. Now, I see I only have 2 minutes left for argument here, so I'd like to reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal unless it was a question.
Yeah.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Justin Roberts. I'm an assistant United States attorney from the District of Nevada. I want to begin by responding to a few of the statements made by the appellant's counsel. First of all, the entire issue in this case was not entrapment. There was not an admission of the elements of the offense that the government was required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. There's a suggestion in the argument that the only issue was entrapment. However, the offer to stipulate was an offer to stipulate to the sending of these pictures, not to the element of intent with respect to the first count of the indictment, the interstate travel with the intent to have sex with a juvenile. And there was also not an offer to stipulate to the element of the second count of the indictment, which was coercion and enticement. There's a discussion of whether or not this evidence went to the defendant's intent. The government's position is this evidence does show the defendant's intent because these pictures and images were sent to a 14-year-old, or what the appellant thought was a 14-year-old, over a series of three and a half months, which culminated in a trip to Nevada to engage in a sexual act with the juvenile.
So the government's position is this is like photographs of a dead body in a murder case where the defendant says, I'll stipulate that the body was found and it had 14 stab wounds and
Well, that is correct, Your Honor, and that's discussed at length in Old Chief, that jurors come to a courthouse with a certain expectation that they're going to see a narrative of how a crime occurred. And for us to have to stop and tell the jury, as is discussed in the Old Chief opinion, that never mind what's behind this door, we're just going to tell you what it is, then they're left with a feeling of emptiness and may not be able to return the verdict of guilty. It's as much to show, as the Old Chief language suggests, a story of guiltiness as it is to prove the elements of the crime. However, the government was put to its burden of proof in this case. The defendant did not offer to stipulate to the offenses in the crime, so the only issue was not entrapment. Therefore, the court below did not abuse its discretion in allowing these images in, and the government took great pains to lessen the prejudicial nature, or the unfairly prejudicial nature, if there is such a thing, by doing snapshots of videos. Several of these images were actually moving pictures of the defendant manipulating himself. The government chose to put it in still shot format and provided only several examples of it, so therefore it was not cumulative as another type of evidence. In fact, the images were of three different varieties. They were still photographs that the defendant sent, they were videos that the defendant sent, and then there was a flip album that the defendant had sent that contained songs and things of that nature. And in fact, let me correct that, there was a fourth type, which was these snap images of him on the webcam manipulating himself. Once again, what was shown was not a moving image of the webcam, but a snapshot. And there's about 11, 12, or 13 of those all together over the 3.5 month period that were provided, not only to show the intent for the first count of the indictment, but the coercion and enticement element, which is a charge that goes from the January 2002 to April 2002 time frame. And these are images sent over that time frame, all of which go to the coercion and enticement element of the second count of the indictment.
Your opponent made two arguments at the start of his argument. One is that the undercover agent was the first person to raise the subject of sex in the chat room conversations. Does the government agree with that?
No, Your Honor. The government does not agree with that, and it's in the brief at footnote 2 of the government's reply brief. That there's a claim in the opening brief on the appellant that it was Erica, the undercover agent, who asked them to do this. The record shows that it was the appellant, Mr. Johnner, who began this discussion, and then it went back and forth, and he ultimately did turn on the
webcam. Actually, there were two I wanted to ask about, and they may blend into each other, but one assertion was made was that the undercover agent was the first one to raise the subject of sex. Does the government agree with that?
No, Your Honor. I believe, as is outlined in the government's brief, with the court's indulgence.
We can find that. I just wanted to know whether you agree with that.
No, Your Honor,
we
do not agree with that.
The second one was that it was the first self-exposure by the defendant was the result of an enticement by the undercover agent. Does the government agree with that?
No, Your Honor.
And that's footnote 2 in your reply.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The defendant and the appellant has suggested that this was prejudicial material. Well, the government, of course, agrees with that. This is prejudicial material. It's prejudicial because it's probative of two separate elements of two separate offenses in the indictment. However, the analysis is whether it's unfairly prejudicial, and it invites the jury to convict the defendant on something unrelated to the offenses charged in the indictment. This evidence was direct evidence, relevant evidence of both the intent with respect to count one and the coercion and enticement prong with respect to count two. The appellant has made much of some of the cases since Old Chief that the court has reviewed, one of which is Marino Valderrama. The court there held that it was an abuse of discretion and not harmless error to have allowed in the moving pictures because, contrary to Old Chief, the moving pictures were not part of a narrative of a story of the crimes that had occurred there. In fact, the court notes that they were inconsistent with the narrative. There was no evidence, circumstantial or direct, that suggested the defendant ever even viewed these images. So therefore, that case is distinguishable from the case that's before the court right now. And Szymanowicz, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that opinion is also not on point, as the appellant would suggest, because the court there had found that this evidence was not relevant to the offenses in the indictment. It was prejudicial, and it was not 404B. This was evidence separate and apart from evidence going to the charges in that offense, which were the Guam sex offenses that were an objective mental state offenses, which only the type of contact there was whether a reasonable person, not whether the defendant intended to have sexual contact with that essentially aroused pleasure. The exact phrase escapes me right now, but again, that case is distinguishable because the evidence that was presented below in this case, Your Honor, was direct evidence of the two counts in the indictment, and therefore the government would ask that the court affirm the court below's ruling and find that the admission of the evidence was not an abuse of discretion.
Can I ask a question just out of curiosity about the sentence? The sentence was 37 months?
I believe it was 37, yes, Your Honor.
How did that come about?
Your Honor, in all honesty, I'm not quite sure how the sentence all came about. I did not try the case below.
That's fine.
My colleague Nancy Davis, now Nancy Cope, tried the case below. Okay.
Thank you.
Your Honors, first thing, factual clarification of the record. The first time sex is ever mentioned is by Erica on page 126 of the first volume of the EOR. First time the word sex comes out of anybody's mouth, it comes out of Erica's mouth. Regarding the enticement to get him to expose himself, they get into this conversation about different names for penises, and he comes out, what about all these different names that you could call a penis? And she says, which one will get you to show it you know you want to? Page 151. And then eventually he does. We know from the case law that this kind of evidence is very prejudicial. Marina Valderrama says that. Szymanowicz says it. That there's probably no evidence that's more prejudicial than evidence that tends to indicate the defendant is a sexual deviant.
Was a contested issue of fact and or law in the case your client's intent?
Never, Your Honor. It was all a pure entrapment defense. So we didn't stipulate to the elements of the offense. But this is just like Codes, which is a case I cite in my reply brief, where the government wanted to bring in prejudicial evidence to show that identity of the robber, and this court said, look, that wasn't a contested issue at trial. Everybody was pretty much...
This is an intent crime.
It is an intent crime.
And you didn't stipulate to intent?
We didn't stipulate to the element. You know, with that, you know,
so
that he was
the result of those two things, as I understand it, is the government was required to prove intent?
The government had to put on a prima facie evidence of intent. But there's gobs of evidence in this record that shows intent. I mean, the pornographic material is just piling it on and piling it on. And the question is, this comes down to, does this evidence have probative value? And where do we look for to answer that? We look to Old Chief. Old Chief says the government doesn't have to accept a stipulation to a point if they need it to show evidentiary richness or narrative integrity. Jury expectations. The government stands up here and tells the court with a straight face that this jury expected to be subjected to pornographic material time and time again during this trial, that the jury would have been disappointed if the government had not subjected them to numerous pornographic, salacious photographs throughout this trial, and it just does not fly. It does not comport with what Old Chief says. Marina Valderrama says Old Chief is not limited to just stipulations to elements, that there are, that it does fit within the analytical framework of was this evidence probative. And we say that with the offer to stipulate that it wasn't probative, it was extremely prejudicial, it infected this whole trial, Mr. Johnner should receive a new trial, one that is fair. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is targeted will be submitted. The court will take a brief recess.